Since the 1980s, voters in the 68th State Assembly District have consistently swung back and forth from Democrat to Republican. Kathy Bernier, a Lake Halley Republican, has represented the district since 2010. That same year, Terry Moulton, another Republican representative from the 68th, won the 23rd State Senate seat. Moulton announced his retirement from the Senate this year. With Kathy Bernier running to take his place, the 68th Assembly District is wide open for a new representative. This hour, we'll talk with the two candidates hoping to be that new representative. Will voters in the 68th continue the Republican winning streak, or will the district swing back to the Democrats? We'll discuss the candidates' platforms and qualifications, and as always, we'll take your calls. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. Thank you for tuning us in this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. With me in the studio from the 68th Assembly District, we welcome in no particular order, Wendy Sue Johnson. She's a Democrat from Eau Claire. She is a former high school teacher and Eau Claire Area School Board member. She practices law at Clemish and Johnson LLC. Wendy Sue Johnson, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Jesse James is a Republican from Altoona. He is a U.S. Army veteran and has a background in warehouse management. He began his career in law enforcement in 2001 and is currently the Altoona Police Chief. Altoona Chief of Police, excuse me. Jesse James, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you.
I want to get the terminology just right. Listeners, this is your chance to speak directly to the candidates from the 68th State Assembly District. They are both new to running for statewide office. What issues do these candidates need to hear, to talk about? What do you want to hear from them? Give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines for your questions and your comments, 1-800-228-5615. So the first question is always the most basic, and it is, why? Why do this to yourselves? Why run for office? So I'll start with Jesse James, Republican candidate Jesse James. Why should you represent the 68th Assembly District, and why are you running?
Well, obviously in the political world, it's interesting times right now. And I look at myself more as an independent voice of the 68th Assembly District. My voting history would show that. However, I lean a little more conservative. I'm pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, pro-military, being a U.S. Army veteran. And it's just been a passion of mine for quite some time. And when the seat opened up, we had some family discussion. It is a family idea. It's a family decision. And it excited me with the seat opening up. My heart was 100% into it. It still is to this day. I'm very excited to move on into a new career field. And it has been a dream of mine. And who knows what can happen. I do believe that one person can make a difference. I take pride in that. And it's really about passion. If your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough. And I'm all for that. And I don't want to be 70 years old sitting in my rocking chair saying, if only I would have ran. I'm more about the what-if kind of possibility guy. And there are contentious issues that are out there, but all I care about is the 68th Assembly District, and that's what I'm going to do. What applies to the Madison-Milwaukee area doesn't necessarily apply to the 68th Assembly because we have a diverse population and residency, farmers, suburban kind of out of the outside of Eau Claire and such. So I'm looking forward to making my voice be heard.
Thank you for that, Jesse James. Yes, it definitely does run the gamut in terms of the district. Wendy Sue Johnson, same question to you. Why should you be the one to represent the assembly, 68th Assembly? What made you run?
Well, what made me run? I think it's been a really long process. As you mentioned, I was a high school social studies teacher. In particular, I loved civics and believe it's every citizen's responsibility to be informed and contribute to their community in the best way that they can. And so when I was looking at switching careers, part of the decision in going to law school was if I wanted to run for office, I thought that, I should be able to read and understand laws before I go down and write them. So it's really just a sense of responsibility to the community. you mentioned, why would anybody do this to themselves? It is a lot of work to be elected, and also a lot of work, you know, to commute from Eau Claire area to Madison. And so, you know, really it's my form of public service. And so that's what has led me to this point. Having been on the school board, I think I really have a really good understanding of school funding and good experience working with people who don't necessarily share my political views to come to really practical decisions that were in the best interest of the school kids in the Eau Claire district. And I am confident that I can do that for the residents of this area.
Thank you for that, Wendy Sue Johnson. And just to be clear, that was a joke. I think most people realize that. I think that, you know, running for office is tough, but it's also an honor above all else. So I just wanted to put that on the record before I get an email. So, Wendy Sue, I'll start with, go back to you, and then we'll go to Jesse James. You know, what's at stake in this election? What do you think the biggest, I mean, there's a lot of issues, but what do you think the biggest, one of the biggest for you is?
Well, there are a lot of big issues, and I'm sure we're going to have questions about school funding formula and spending on infrastructure and income inequality and access to health care. But what's at stake is, you know, you mentioned that the 60th Assembly District was a swing district for a long time. Well, it hasn't been a swing district since the maps were redrawn in 2011. It was drawn to favor Republicans, as were most of the Assembly districts in the state. And I think that elections should be meaningful, that voters should be able to look at the candidate and judge on the quality of the candidate, and the assembly map should be responsive to the voters' will. The 68th being drawn to favor Republicans was part of the reason I ran, frankly, because I don't think that we can give up and just concede that the maps are predetermined. We need to challenge every single election because every voter in Wisconsin deserves a choice.
Jesse James, what do you see as one of the top issues or the top issue in the 68th Assembly District or statewide, if you prefer? And what do you think is at stake here?
Well, from what I'm hearing and getting the feet on the street is the workforce issues, the lack of employees to hold the positions with the economy the way it is booming. There's a lack of employees for the jobs that exist, whether it's the electrician field, the home construction field,
we're talking
plumbers.
Skilled trades.
Skilled trades, exactly. And there's just not enough workers. A lot of the guys and girls are saying, we need more workers. They can't find anybody to come in and work. And that's affecting our area. That's affecting the 68th Assembly District, and I think that's a huge issue.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. Hey, we've got one already. Let's go to Liz in Eau Claire. Liz, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind? Liz?
Hi there.
Yeah.
This is Liz. Yeah, Your voice cut out there for a minute, so I wasn't sure it was.
Sorry
me.
About that. You're on the air, so what's on your mind?
All right, let's go then. My question is about affordability versus access to health insurance and the ability to go to afford to be able to go to a doctor when you need to.
Okay.
So lots of people are employed in several part-time jobs, which are low income. Their employers may or may not offer insurance, and sometimes even if they do, the person employed can't afford it. And I had a situation like this when I was working, that a woman in housekeeping in a large institution suddenly got diabetes, couldn't afford the insurance offered by her employer, and was therefore up a creek. I mean, really a problem for her.
Mm-hmm.
So what would these two candidates do
All right.
to make health insurance and not just access, but affordable care possible for people in these multiple low-income situations that are not eligible for Medicaid for one reason or another?
Okay. All right, Liz, thank you so much for the question. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you have any questions or comments for our candidates. Again, we're speaking with Democrat Wendy Sue Johnson and Republican Jesse James. They are both running for the 68th State Assembly District, which includes parts of Eau Claire, Chippewa, Clark, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties, communities including Altoona, Augusta, Boyd, Eau Claire, Fairchild, Fall Creek, Ludington, Osseo, Stanley, Thorpe, Willard, and Wilson, just to name a few. Jesse James, I'll go to you. Healthcare is a big issue. At the federal level, you've got the Affordable Care Act. People love it. People hate it. The state has been doing some things to try to make insurance more affordable. What can representatives in the state assembly do to address concerns like Liz's?
Well, it's going to take a team effort. It's not just up to one representative to figure this out. There is issues with the Affordable Care Act. The voters, the people that I've talked to, say that it's broken and we need to do something to fix it. Now, as far as having ideas on how to repair it, it's going to be a collective effort.
Sure.
There's not one solid solution, and I don't believe that having Medicaid for all or Badger Care for all is the proper solution.
If I might interrupt, I'm sorry, but why isn't that?
Affordability. That just like this young lady on the phone just asked about accessibility. We need to make it accessible. I think for the most part, healthcare is accessible out there. People have to do their due diligence in researching it, from what I understand. And there are some creative things out there that can help the people in the 68th Assembly. You just have to be able to find it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key. We need to, number one, get that information out to the people and say, this is what's available. Because a lot of people, with the amount of language that's on the website under the Affordable Care Act and stuff, it's hard to really comprehend and understand the language in there and where exactly do you go. And then we have to make it affordable. We need to be creative. We need to come up with some things. We need to find a solution to the problem before we do repair it. And I'm willing to sit at the table and let's figure it out.
There's been a lot of talk about and we're talking at the federal level here, but Congress, Republicans in Congress have been trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They've undone some of the mandates. Right now, a big discussion is a mandate over covering people with pre-existing conditions. So in a nutshell, I mean, it's a big topic, but do you think it should be repealed, Obama, the Affordable Care Act?
Yes. But I also do support pre-existing conditions. We need to cover those that have pre-existing conditions, absolutely.
All right. Wendy Sue Johnson, what would you tell folks like Liz that are concerned not only about access but also affordability? Because the Affordable Care Act itself, I mean, some of the deductibles on that plan are very high. And the premiums, I've got friends who pay the penalty because they can't afford the premiums. So what is the silver bullet?
Yeah, we actually just had this discussion in my house this weekend because we have really good health care, but we still have a fairly large deductible. And so my husband says, well, maybe I'll put this thing off until the kids have used the deductible before I incur that sort of cost. But unlike Jesse, I would absolutely expand public options. We need to accept the federal Medicaid dollars that the current governor turned down. Tens of thousands of people would have health care insurance if we had done that. We can learn from the industrialized nations throughout the world that have better health outcomes than we do and have lower cost health care. But they do that through a public option. And so I'm not willing to look any human in the eye and say, you don't deserve to have access to health care. They shouldn't have to wait until it's critical and they're in an emergency room. Every single human should go to preventative care to get their chronic disease needs met. And the only way to do that is to expand public options and make sure every single person is able to go. Saying someone has access but they have a $10,000 deductible is not access. We need to ensure everybody and give everybody access.
If I could follow up, with regard to the I forget the number. It was like $300 million for the expansion of Medicaid, excuse me, that was offered by the federal government. Governor Scott Walker's rationale, he said, for denying that is that if the state takes that in the future, there's not a guarantee that the federal government will continue to pay it. So it could put this could, in theory, put the state in a tough spot.
Well, that's a cop out. So you're going to deny people coverage now because someday we might have to reduce the coverage. And so, you know, 4 years, 8 years, we are denying people health care because they might not, we might not be able to afford it in the future. Well, how many lives are being lost, or how many people are struggling with health needs that are unmet during that time period?
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or comment, we have full phone lines. But I want to ask one question. We already touched on redistricting, but Wendy Sue Johnson, I wanted to go to you on that because you're one of the original plaintiffs in a 2015 court case arguing against the political redistricting that happened in 2011 under Republican control. The case made it to the U.S. Supreme Court this year, Gill versus Whitford. But justices didn't rule on it. They passed it back down to the lower courts on, some would argue, a technicality. But so what – is that case dead? And
no.
Talk about, you know, your involvement in this case. Are you still involved in that?
Yes. The amended complaint was filed just about 2 weeks ago.
Right. So what does that mean?
That means the complaint now has corrected some of the questions that the Supreme Court raised. And so additional plaintiffs have been added to help the trial court determine that there's been actual harms. It's called standing, and it is somewhat of a legal technicality. We could spend an hour just on that case. But the case has always been about the long haul. It is about creating standards so that states throughout the nation can't gerrymander. And that applies to Republicans and Democrats, because there are, you know, examples in other states of Democrats doing it. The point is that elections should be fair and competitive. And we'll be back in the trial court, hopefully early in 2019.
Would it set a dangerous precedent? Because in I believe the Constitution spells out that the elected officials should be doing this. I'm not sure if it's explicit, but it's implied at least.
Yeah, so people confuse the two. So the case is talking about how the standard of a particular map, challenging these maps as gerrymandered. But the process can't be changed by the Supreme Court. That can only be changed by the legislature. And, you know, one of the first things that I would want to do would be to push nonpartisan redistricting. And so in places like the Iowa model is, you know, kind of the classic, the legislature still votes it up or down, but you're giving it to map drawing experts to draw a fair map, and then the legislature can vote on it. And so just like any other bill, you know, Jesse and I aren't going to sit down and write the language ourselves for the most part. You're going to, you know, send that to the staff, the lawyers on staff to do that. And that would be the same for the map drawing in the future if the nonpartisan redistricting would occur. And our predecessor in the 68th actually chaired the Elections Committee and chose not to even have a hearing on that nonpartisan process. I don't think that representatives should be choosing their voters. We should be open to allowing the voters to choose us.
Jesse James, your thoughts on the redistricting issue, because some people want it not to be in the hands of politicians, because they would argue that if one party's in control, of course, they're going to draw it for their political advantage. So do you think that we should reform how the maps are drawn?
Well, this is an interesting question, and I did lack knowledge in this area. And I'm here comes a confession.
That's all right.
Gerrymandering, I didn't know what it was.
Sure.
And I don't think a lot of our, our voters in the 68th Assembly even know what it was or know what it is. I looked it up.
Yeah.
And then I started doing some research. And the way I look at this, if something's broke, let's sit down at the table together collectively and let's figure it out and let's fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So learning more and more about this issue, to what I know, every 10 years, it seems like they do the redistricting.
Yeah, we're coming up in 2021.
And it's coming up again.
Yeah.
And whoever controls the House or the Assembly and the Senate, they decide on how the districting happens. And it always goes in the favor of the party in control.
Right. And if it's split in the past, it goes to courts a lot of times.
Correct. And I think first educating those in the 68th Assembly District what it actually is, that's key. And then let's make a decision on what it looks like. I think in Michigan, the voters or the residents there put a petition together. There's 485,000 people, I think, that signed the petition, and then they created a group that did the redistricting and stuff. I don't know if that works, but any idea and solution is viable, and let's sit down and let's fix it if it's broke.
Wisconsin doesn't have a well, sure, go ahead.
Well, so it sounds like, Jesse, you'll commit to a nonpartisan process if you get down there instead of me?
I don't see. I look at anything. Absolutely.
Because
I'm looking, I want to learn more about it. Absolutely.
Michigan has a referendum process.
Right.
Wisconsin,
I was going to say.
Okay, that's the issue.
But 40 at last count of 72 counties in Wisconsin have passed a resolution encouraging the state legislature to pass this process. It's only been done once in Wisconsin by Republicans because you're right, it had been split control in the past. So Democrats have never done it in Wisconsin. You know, they've done it in other states, but not in Wisconsin. I just want to clarify that.
Maryland, you know, Illinois, there's a lot of examples of Democrats doing the same thing. And so it is a big issue. So, like, you know, you would consider if there were some nonpartisan ideas, you'd take a look at them. But at its core, do you think that leaving it up to politicians who want to stay in power, or at least the parties, do you think that by itself just could breed trouble?
I think it already has.
1-800-228-5615. We've got full phone lines right now. Let's go to the phones. Let's see here. In Rice Lake, we've got Jim on the phone. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I was listening to your show, and the Democratic candidate has now made a statement about income inequality. I've heard this from Bernie Sanders all the way down through the ranks, but I've never heard a solution. If a CEO of a company makes too much money, how much should he or she make? And what's a solution to this income inequality other than to continually stamp our feet and say it's wrong? Thank you. I'll take my answer off the line.
Great. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. Wendy Sue, that sounds like it's teed up for you.
Yeah. So one obvious answer is raising the minimum wage. During our lifetimes, real wages have not increased in approximately the last 40 years. Trickle-down economics has proven to be a fallacy. And so when now you have CEOs making over 300 times the average worker, that's a problem. When income taxes were first introduced, the top rate was in the 90%. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying we should go back to that, but we should absolutely have the ability to raise wages at the bottom and cap salaries at the top, because right now you've got an economy that's working for a very, very small number of people. So even though we have low unemployment, people aren't able to afford housing. They're not able to afford health care. They're not able to afford college. And any adult who is working full-time should be able to meet their basic needs.
If I could follow up, who would be responsible for capping salaries at the top?
Well, the current governor, one of the first things he did was to give tax breaks at the top. And so if you reverse those sorts of tax breaks at the top and benefit tax breaks for people who are actually struggling to get by, that's the priorities that we can choose.
I see. Jesse James, what do you say to Jim? You know, there's a lot of concerns when people hear income wealth redistribution. A lot of people are nervous about, say, socialism, and, you know, Bernie Sanders was, before he ran as a Democrat, was known as a Democratic socialist. But what do you tell people that have concerns about income inequality? A lot of people are, you know, struggling to get by, yet there's some people who make comfortable, is one way to put it, a living. So do you think that should be addressed, and do you think that there's any solution to it?
Again, this seems to be an ongoing issue, and it's a hot topic for especially our area. I'm willing to sit down at the table. I know that the standard was like $15 an hour. Let's make everybody have $15 an hour minimum wage. I don't know if that's necessarily the right answer. I think if we sat down collectively and came up with a medium, I think that's more favorable. But again, it definitely puts a burden on the free market and the free enterprise of the CEOs and stuff to make their decisions of their companies, and I think that that's their right to do so.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. You're listening to the 68th State Assembly District Candidate Debate on Wisconsin Public Radio. This district includes most of Eau Claire County and parts of Chippewa, Clark, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. Listeners in Altoona, Augusta, Eastern Eau Claire, Humbert, and Osseo, This is your district. I'm Rich Kramer. The two candidates in the November 6th general election join me in the studio today. They are Republican Jesse James of Altoona and Democrat Wendy Sue Johnson of Eau Claire. We pick up the conversation when we return. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, 88.3 and 88.7.
Support for WPR comes from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin Foster Care Program, dedicated to helping thousands of Wisconsin foster kids connect with caring families. More about being a foster parent is at chw.org/TFC. Support also comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, Minnesota, hosting Waterlines by Annie Haney. Textured abstract paintings from collected water and sediment from shorelines. MMAM.org.
The 68th State Assembly District includes parts of Eau Claire, Chippewa, Clark, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. Voters in this district live in places like Boyd, Fairchild, Greenwood, Stanley, and Wilson, to name a few. Today we're talking with the two candidates competing in the November 6th general election. In studio, we have Democrat Wendy Sue Johnson of Eau Claire and Republican Jesse James of Altoona. What concerns you most about your local community, about the state? Give us a call, share your questions and your thoughts at 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Before we do go to the phones, I wanted to, since we already touched on income inequality, there's another issue, the issue of rural versus more urban development. And we've got a new WPR intern, Taylor Pomisil, who took a look at the Eau Claire County as a whole, which has a lot of differences, as we already alluded to. Not only, you know, the rural agricultural versus the more urban areas, but you've got areas that are really hot with development right now, Altoona, Eau Claire, and other areas that aren't seeing that same sort of development. So Taylor took a look, and here's her report.
Downtown Eau Claire opens its doors each morning to the screeching noise of machinery with millions of dollars invested in projects and construction. The $60 million Palo Center at the Confluence that just opened over the weekend was one. People in rural communities, even just 25 minutes to the southeast in the city of Augusta, aren't seeing these new projects. For some, downtown progress isn't their big concern. Their main focus is getting by. Brenda Pettis is the manager of the Augusta Food Pantry. She says rural communities like this are struggling to provide the same resources the city does for those who are financially struggling.
In the city of Eau Claire, you have numerous churches and food pantries and places they can go get meals. Augusta, we have a food pantry, and it's only open 2 hours a month. Right there in itself causes a huge issue.
Pettis says they serve anywhere from 29 to 52 families per month, and some in the community rely completely on the pantry to make ends meet.
It is heartbreaking when you watch them try so hard to change their life circumstances, and life just keeps happening to them.
According to a United Way study of poverty, Eau Claire County already has poverty levels in the double digits. Federal numbers revealed 14% of people are making under the $12,000 a year threshold. Jan Porath of the United Way of the Chippewa Valley says Eau Claire County is in even deeper trouble than what the federal numbers say. Her organization introduced the Asset Limited Income Constrained Employee Study, or ALICE, in 2016 to look in-depth at the cost of living in each county in Wisconsin. ALICE says the modern survival budget is actually closer to nearly $20,000 per person, and an additional 28% are not hitting those numbers. Together, Porath says these two numbers suggest nearly half of Eau Claire County is living at or below the poverty level with the ALICE threshold. That's 42%.
It needs to be addressed, no matter what side you're on.
Eau Claire's former city manager Mike Huggins says the signs all looked positive when major investments began transforming the downtown and the unemployment rate began to fall. Still, Huggins says people are financially suffering in the city.
There are people that are prospering. There are people that are doing well, have recovered since the 2008 recession. And then there are a large number of households and families that continue to kind of do battle every day.
Huggins worked with a citizen-led nonprofit focused on public problem-solving campaigns called Clear Vision of Eau Claire. The group held meetings across the county to tackle poverty. Huggins says when he went to Augusta, he remembered the feeling of despair among people struggling in the rural community who couldn't access Eau Claire's jobs, transportation, education, or help.
The feeling I came away with was that for some people, you know, it might as well have been on the other side of the country.
While there's an arts and culture focus right now in the city, United Way Director Porath says many in both regions may not see it.
My concern is that there's 42% of our population that don't have it in their budget to participate in some of those quality of life experiences.
Back at the Augusta Food Pantry, Brenda Pettis says she'll remain patient to see if the rural communities finally get their turn.
I would hope that in time, it would work its way around to all of us, too.
Huggins says the best way to fix the lack of resources in rural areas is to find ways to build connections and remove the us versus them mentality.
When you talk about values, what people discover is no matter whether they are, you know, living in a rural area or the city, or they're young or they're old or they're black or they're white or whatever, that many times we share common values.
For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Taylor Pomisil.
Thank you for that report, Taylor. Wendy Sue Johnson, I'll go to you. So there is this disparity within the city of Eau Claire, but also in the county. I mean, there's a lot of cases like Augusta within the 68th. So how can a legislature or how kind of help address that? Is it economic development that we need to be doing in these rural communities that are seeing people leave for various reasons? Mm-hmm. What would you tell folks that are living in Augusta that feel that despair?
Yeah. So I actually remember when I was knocking doors in Fairchild, I met an older woman who said, "Give us something. We've lost our senior center. We've lost our school. There are no businesses actually in town. You've got the Cenex and a couple of bars on the highway." And so Fairchild, I would say, is, another example of experiencing that sort of poverty. The Fairchild Elementary School, consolidating with Osseo, and then, just the decline in enrollment. Well, under the current school funding formula, they had no choice but to close. And so, a lot of the schools are, the biggest employer in some of these small towns. And so addressing school funding could certainly assist in that area. I think actually after having had that experience and meeting people in Fairchild, my wheels have been turning on how to get some of the creative economy, out in those areas. I've been through Fairchild on an art crawl, for example. So could there be a permanent, artist making space? The thing that keeps coming up when I'm hearing these things is well, two things. First of all, we were just talking about minimum wage and, that Alice study, I think, determined just under $12 an hour would allow an adult working full time to, get above the poverty line. So, when we're talking about whether it should be 15 or whatever, I think raising it to $12 an hour would be a good first step to get those people out of poverty. The second thing that comes to mind is spending $4.5 billion on an incentive in the southeast corner of state for a foreign corporation. And that's a number that's really hard to get your head around. And so I, parsed it out in different ways. And it comes out to almost $8,000 per citizen in Wisconsin. So can you imagine if we, instead of giving $4.5 billion to build this, thing down in the southeast part of the state, we gave $8,000 to every citizen? You could put a down payment on a house. You could use that as an entrepreneur to launch a small business in Fairchild and in Augusta and Fall Creek. And so we make choices in government, and I think that we've made the wrong choices in the past 8 years that have not benefited everyone, and we could solve a lot of those problems by making different choices.
Thank you, Wendy Sue Johnson. Jesse James, I'll go to you. So how do we as a state, or you as a potential lawmaker, help spread the type of activity, economic renaissance that we're seeing in the city of Eau Claire to places like Fairchild or Augusta?
Well, it takes a village to raise a community. And those that live in that area, I've heard the same concerns that Wendy has visiting these areas. They need to come together. They need to do they need to be creative. I totally that we need to bring economic development there. We need to have a better broadband servicing in that area. That's a huge issue, especially in the rural areas. There's limited accessibility, so I totally support them kind of ideas. Schools, absolutely. You know, people choose to come to Altoona because of the brand new elementary school. I think that's a huge thing. Schools attract the population. So I think building or remodeling or whatever it looks like to bring people to attract to the city, that's what you do. And then when the people come, they'll build.
1-800-228-5615. Let's go to the phones now. We've got some folks that have been on the line for a while. Vern in Wilson, you're on the air. Vern, what's on your mind? Whoops, hold on one second, Vern. All right, Vern, now you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Let me shove a radio down. Okay. I live in the town of Wilson. Eau Claire County has kept us in a pit since I was a kid here back in 1948. Us, Fairchild, Augusta, Ludington, they have not allowed us to build houses and everything else. But the thing is, on education, Shanghai is the highest in the world. Now, Eisenhower, back in 1956, when the Russians launched Sputnik.
We're focusing on the 68. So what do you think should be done with regard to education?
We don't have quality books. We don't have quality libraries. The kids that are gifted don't get the extra funding they need. Like Altoona and Eau Claire, they get the best schools there. You know, the wealthy people do.
Okay.
Stanley Boyd, they're more concerned about football than they are about math and science.
Well, Vern, I'll stop you right there. Thanks for the call, and let me go to the candidates here. Jesse James, you know, let's talk about school funding in terms of the differences between larger population centers and not. This past budget, the state, the governor, and the legislature included more money per student overall, but also sparsity aid, which is aimed at helping those rural districts out in Vern's area. Do you think some people are saying that it's welcome, but they're talking about the overall school funding formula and the whole idea that it's based on population, you know, property taxes, and state aid. So do you have any ideas for how to get more funding to those rural districts?
Well, I think we need to look at the formula. Is it working? We need to make it to where it's not only favoring the Eau Claires, the Madisons, the Milwaukees, but let's get it to where we can make it more favorable for the smaller areas so that they can keep their schools, like Fairchild, for example, instead of partnering with Osseo. Again, I would totally support the continuation of support the per pupil monies going in per student and keep the additional dollars funneling into the education system.
Okay.
My wife was a teacher as well, and the teachers, they're all for the students, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that teachers do for our students in the schools is amazing, up to including buying them shoes, jackets, snow gear, anything and everything that they need. Let's keep continuing helping those teachers because that's where their passion is, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Wendy Sue Johnson, your thoughts on disparities between funding for rural districts and more urban districts?
Yeah, so I think, it doesn't make any sense to pit districts against, or communities against communities. And actually, Eau Claire is funding below the state average. It has been since 1993 when, right after Unroyal closed, we were a conservative funding district. And so La Crosse spends millions of more dollars each year because we were locked in on that funding formula in 1993.
Sure.
And so The funding formula is clearly broken when you look at, you know, I don't think it's Milwaukee and Madison and Eau Claire that are benefiting. I think it's places like, some of the ring counties around Milwaukee that have much higher than state average funding. Every child in Wisconsin deserves a quality education. And so we need to make sure that happens and it isn't dependent on whether you can pass a referendum or not, or what you were spending in 1993. We should be funding every school appropriately, so that every child has an opportunity for an excellent education.
With that, let's take our final break here. We are getting close to the top of the hour, but we do have another. We've got Chris in Eau Claire. If you're still on the line, Chris, hang tight. We're going to get to you. He's got a question about vouchers. Voters in the 68th State Assembly District are 43 days away from electing their next representative. The 68th includes parts of Eau Claire, Chippewa, Clark, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. If you live in places like Augusta, Fall Creek, Thorpe, Withy, or Willard, among others, you live in the 68th, and these candidates in the studio with me are hoping to represent you in Madison. I'm Rich Kramer. I'm joined by Republican Jesse James of Altoona and Democrat Wendy Sue Johnson of Eau Claire. We'll be back in just a bit.
The Me Too movement feels like it's just getting started. How should we treat the men whose careers are finished? Some of those who have abused and bullied others have started what you might call a comeback tour. I'm Joshua Johnson. When should we end their exile? If ever. Next time on 1A from WAMU and NPR.
At 1 on the Ideas Network. Support for WPR comes from Port Washington Tourism, nestled on the shore of Lake Michigan, presenting the Farmers Market and Beer Gardens, both continuing through the end of October. More is at visitportwashington.com. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, presenting Fun Home, a musical about seeing parents through grown-up eyes, October 4th through the 8th at the Pablo Center at the Confluence in Eau Claire. CVTG.org.
Voters in the 68th state, Wisconsin Public Radio has been providing listeners access to their legislative candidates for over 20 years. We hope that these on-air discussions are giving listeners and candidates the opportunity to personally connect over important issues. I'm Rich Kramer. Today on the West Side, we're talking with the candidates from the 68th State Assembly District. They face off November 6th in the general election. The winner will represent parts of Eau Claire, Chippewa, Clark, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. The candidates vying on that fateful day, Wendy Sue Johnson, Democrat from Eau Claire, and Jesse James, Republican from Altoona. They are joining me in the studio this morning, and we thank them for taking time out of their busy campaign schedules to talk with us and connect with voters. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got questions or comments, this is your chance to speak directly with these candidates, 1-800-228-5615. So staying on the education, public education versus private education theme in this case, we've got Chris in Eau Claire. Chris, are you still there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So what's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling to ask both candidates their feelings about the voucher program that is statewide in the state of Wisconsin that pulls on the budgets of all the school districts in Wisconsin. Presently, there was a discussion about putting the amount that goes from their property taxes on their property tax bill so they would know how much they are spending to support the statewide parental choice program. I'm wondering what the candidates feel about that. I also need them to know that the funding sources, now the school boards go out to levy that money back as opposed to how these vouchers were funded before. And in the general purpose revenue, presently vouchers take precedence as number one. Independent charter schools take the second spot, and public schools are left with what's left to be divided between the 421 school districts. And finally, this has never been debated or put to the voters, and I'm wondering how they feel about that as well.
All right, Chris, thank you so much for those questions. 1-800-228-5615. We've got 10 minutes more. We can try to work some calls in. 800-228-5615. Jesse James, your thoughts on charter schools, or voucher schools, excuse me. So in Eau Claire, I believe that we've got, I think, Regis, and there might be one or two in the city of Eau Claire that are part of the parental choice voucher system. So you know, what do you say to people that are concerned that it's drawing money out of the public school districts and, you know, kind of pitting, another example of pitting one against the other?
Yeah, this is obviously another issue that I've been introduced to since the campaign started.
Sure.
And I believe there's another voucher school in Stanley, if
yeah,
I recall correctly.
Perhaps. I'm not positive.
You know, this is a hard one because, for example, my daughter, she wanted to go to a different school, and we were on a waiting list for 3 years.
For open enrollment?
Yes.
Okay.
We're Altoona School District, and, you know, my daughter wanted to learn about God, and she wanted to be able to pray at school.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on the waiting list for Crestview, and the opportunity came up, and unfortunately, we did end up removing her from the Altoona School District and brought her to Crestview.
Mm-hmm.
We were notified at the end of July we had to make a decision. I know that's not a voucher school, but I am for school choice. I think as parents, we are blessed to have our children in our lives. God put them in our life for a reason. And we're obligated to provide what they desire growing up and what they seek as far as educational means. So it's definitely interesting. I know that there is a father that lives in Stanley, and he has a child that is autistic, and he's chosen to bring that child to Eau Claire into a school in Eau Claire, and he had ultimately ended up renting an apartment have an address in Eau Claire to have the ability for the special resources available that child needed. And I totally support that. I think we're obligated to provide whatever needs our children are wanting and what they need to be successful in life. Then let's do that.
Wendy Sue Johnson, your take on Chris's, or what would you tell Chris basically with regard to voucher schools?
So the voucher transparency bill to put that piece on our property taxes is just a small step to inform taxpayers, just like we know how much is going to the public school versus CVTC versus the county. It's all there. That seems obvious so that people understand where their tax dollars are going. But as far as the voucher program in general, what we learned when it was expanded to Eau Claire is that the vast majority of students in this area taking advantage of the voucher program were already students in those private schools. And so their families had already found ways to choose a religious or, you know, a private education. If we had unlimited resources, maybe it would make sense to, you know, pay for different school systems. But clearly we do not. Public schools have to take every child as they are, with special needs or not. They are preparing our workforce to take care of us when, you know, for future generations. And the voucher schools, according to the research, do not provide better outcomes for children. In other words, they're not reading at better levels or graduating at higher levels in a voucher program versus a public school. And so it doesn't make sense to have public dollars going to voucher programs at the expense of public schools, which are struggling.
1-800-228-5615. We've got time to get one more call on the air here. And I'm going to go to Aaron in Eau Claire. Aaron wants to talk about Foxconn, which we've already touched on a bit, but it definitely deserves more attention. So, Aaron, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering about how the candidates feel about our local road money that's being sent to build roads to Foxconn, and I'm wondering if they support that.
All right. Thanks for that. Wendy Sue Johnson, I'll start with you first.
Well, like you said, I've already had my say about what I think about that, spending all of that money in the southeast corner of the state. And specifically in the 68th, we had a bridge collapse over Paint Creek. People in the town of Lafayette are disconnected. We should never allow our roads and bridges to get to that point. We make choices. And the administration in the past 8 years has made choices to take money away from roads or to not properly fund roads and schools. So absolutely, I would make different choices with the state budget.
If I could follow up, you know, we talked about Foxconn and all the money going to southeast Wisconsin. The theory is, and the goal of the governor is to have that, you know, first of all, the promise of 13,000 jobs, which is a big number. Some people are unsure of whether that's possible or not, but the company says it is. Anyway, the idea is that it'll pay back, and then eventually it will. The state will have a net benefit. Also, you've got some companies like Hoffman Construction and others that are from this area that are contracting down there. So,
as previously mentioned, trickle-down economics does not work. If we're looking at the free market working, why should government be subsidizing those businesses? That's not the government's job.
And Jesse James, your thoughts on Foxconn? I believe it was $30 million in federal funding that was sent to rehab part of I-94 down in that area because of the additional traffic that'll come from the factory once it opens up. So, you know, what do you say to Aaron's concern or to question?
So, I guess in my mindset, I'm thinking, so if Wisconsin didn't take advantage of the Foxconn facility and have the Wisconsin economic development there in place, obviously improving Wisconsin's economy, where would it have gone? And my question to people is, if Amazon wanted to build a facility here, would we allow them to come in as well? The roads, we need our roads. And I'm going to specific, the roads in the I-94 corridor, all that's going to be done. Mm-hmm. There's nothing we can do about it right now. Foxconn is going to be coming. We need to look at the roads in the 68th Assembly District. And I'm open to any measures, any kind of revenue funding that we can sit down and figure it out, whether it's the gas price taxes, whether it's toll booths, whatever it looks like. Yeah, there's some issues with the roads, obviously. It's a huge issue statewide. But when things are broke, we need to fix it. And this really precipitated, from what I understand, from Jim Doyle days. So this kind of started with Governor Doyle, and then it just kind of snowballed, carried on through the years all the way to where we are current day. It's not going to be an overnight fix, but I'm dedicated and I'm passionate about getting our roads improved and our bridges that are obviously failing throughout the state.
Yeah, road funding issues are definitely not unique to one party. It's an issue that we've had for decades in Wisconsin. We could talk about that for another hour, but unfortunately that is our time. I want to thank our candidates very much for coming in. The candidates running to represent the 68th State Assembly District are Republican Jesse James, thank you for being here. Democrat Wendy Sue Johnson, thank you for being here. As always, thanks to our callers and listeners and to Team Westside, especially Catherine Thomas, who produced today's program, Mart Cypress, who handled on-air production, WPR News intern Taylor Pomisall, who produced the news report that helped spur the discussion today, and our public relations intern, Rachel Klepper. Tune in next Monday morning at 10. We're going to be talking with the candidates running for the 87th State Assembly District. Republican James Jimmy Boy Edming and Democratic challenger Elizabeth Riley will be here. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.